Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 254, and we're going to do a recap on DevCon 4, which is an Ethereum conference that myself, Kale Teeter, was able to attend last week in Prague. But on the line, I have Kendall also with us, and our normal crew seems to be disintermediated this week. Everybody's off doing things.
So busy.
But Kendall was able to join, so we'll start with our normal news stuff here and go through some of that. I know Kendall has a couple she wants to comment on, and then I'll dive in and talk a little bit about the conference and some of the things that Microsoft has been announcing that are pretty cool in this space, and we'll go from there.
So one of the big updates this week is that Azure SQL Data Warehouse now has some enhanced security capabilities, as well as some productivity capabilities as well. So Gen 2 launched in April, so a lot of good query performance enhancement there, but the fact that they now have pretty much industry-leading security with row-level security access control is pretty awesome in terms of security policy and really refining that strategy there. So we also have some workload management capabilities that are going to optimize continued workload management. And so I just think this is some really good updates to this product.
Yeah, and one of the other things that just came out was there were some updates around the Apache Kafka integration that we have with Azure Event Hubs. So Apache Kafka is a high-scale, enterprise-grade messaging bus that people use primarily for queuing up messages and being able to kind of handle those kind of workflows for integration. And Event Hubs obviously has a similar notion in our world in Azure of this high-scale kind of messaging infrastructure that allows this stuff to come through. So these two have kind of married up, and basically there's a some new integration out there that's now gone GA. So it's been in preview for some time now that basically allows you to stream your events using the Kafka protocol, but the back end would obviously just be running in Azure Event Hub. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and to touch on that too, just for anyone that's doesn't have as much familiarity here, there are some samples on GitHub of how you can integrate these services. And then also there's an Azure Event Hubs for Apache Kafka, like a Azure Friday video. So just recommend checking those out if you want a little bit more detail on what these technologies do and what this this new update will allow.
Awesome. Yeah, and the other one I wanted to touch on here is it's specific to SAP in the announcement. It was about automating SAP deployments. But it hits on a couple other things around DevOps that come up quite frequently. And I hear this actually a lot around especially Terraform and Ansible. So, essentially, if you're familiar with our infrastructure in Azure, we have the ARM templates for infrastructure as code type models. So basically allows you to describe your infrastructure, have the ARM modules inside Azure, basically, take those things and create assets for you. And then when you talk to another cloud, like, Amazon or Google or some others, they all have a similar thing, right? They have their similar formats that are kind of native. And then a company called HashiCorp had come up with this thing called Terraform, which was basically cross-cloud capable. And so it allows you to basically write your infrastructure, whatever your storage, your VMs, these kind of things at a more like higher level and allow those Terraforms to then run and talk to ARM or CloudFormation or whatnot. And so when folks are, migrating from Amazon or integrating with multi-cloud, this is a good thing. And basically this is showcasing that integration that exists, for those.
Awesome.
Cool. So that's the news we had for this week. But I think we could dive right into the main topic here, which was around blockchain, one of my favorite subjects. And once a year, there's a big Ethereum developer conference, and it moves around all over the world to different places. And so the first one I went to was in China a couple years ago, and then it was in Cancun last year, and this year it was in Prague,
You've
and
done a
which
good
is in
job
Czech.
choosing where this is going to happen. Those sound like very nice locations to be able to go to for a conference.
Yeah, and there's usually significance. Like Prague has been a country where, for lack of a better term, they kind of lost their identity throughout the years as other regimes have kind of taken over and things like that. So there's a lot of thought that goes into that that aligns a lot to what Ethereum is doing as well. So basically, being able to have self-sovereign identities and be able to have these government organizations or governing organizations set up that are more decentralized fits perfectly for the model that's happening in Prague as well. But the main focus there is around primarily public blockchains, not just cryptocurrencies, but others as well. And basically, Microsoft was there, as usual, showing what we're doing in the Azure cloud and all the work that we've been doing on the blockchain team to integrate into those solutions. So, we had a booth there, and there was a bunch of other vendors that were there, and we made some kind of bigger announcements around stuff that we're building there. So, the EVM is the kind of the center of the Ethereum universe for executing the code and whatnot. And what Microsoft is bringing to the table was, and announced was an EEVM, which is an enclave ready EVM. And to take a step back at what an enclave is a hardware module. So if you've been following what we've been doing in this space and others, in the most recent years, there's this whole notion around confidential computing, which essentially is relying on these hardware modules that exist. So you can think of in traditional sense when we execute code as part of our, an application that's running on a server. So there's an operating system that's running, and usually it's virtualized because they're running in the cloud. And essentially, there's a hypervisor, and then there's this guest OS that's running. And inside the guest OS, we'll run our actual code. With these trusted execution environments, what we have is a specialized chip that's running on that machine that's got an attestation. What does that mean? It's like kind of a fancy word for saying essentially that hardware chip, we can verify that it hasn't been tampered with. So the firmware and everything like that, we can make sure that it's a sound, essentially operating system. And then from that point forward, we basically have to code sign anything that we put in there. So any code that's going to run in there that we write as .NET code or Java or something like that would basically be code signed. So now we have a strong assurance that the code hasn't been tampered with. So then we built this kind of trust, which kind of leads to the term trusted execution environment. And so like the EVM is basically a fork of the Ethereum EVM that basically allows us to use these enclaves to execute smart contracts. And so you can imagine that in Ethereum, the way it works is we have a bunch of EVMs are all executing the same code so that we know that if one gets compromised, they all didn't get compromised. But in this case, we don't need to do that right as much because, and these are primarily centered around enterprises or consortiums like that. And so then we don't have to have so many machines like burning CPU to do this. We can basically say we have a strong assurance that the hardware is good, the software is good, we're good to go.
So traditionally, before this kind of emergence of this technology in this way, you would have to do a lot more validation because you didn't have that granularity on one particular EVM. Is that right?
That's right. So basically, this has given us that trust back that we can assure that there hasn't been anything kind of compromised by hackers or viruses or any of that kind of stuff that would be on the system.
Which, from my understanding, as someone that's very new to the blockchain concept in general, that's one of the most foundational pieces of it is knowing that it's secure and the level of security that you have. So this sounds like a very, I guess, a change that's in line with kind of the overall premise of blockchain in general, right?
That's right. Yeah, and the thing is, again, I mentioned this is a C++, I didn't mention, but it's a C++ implementation of the EVM. The most common one that's used out there is written in Go. And this is a one that's really built for security. It doesn't work right now exactly 100% compatible with public spec for EVMs. So running it in a proof of work network or any of that stuff is not quite there yet. But it's very close. Essentially, it's been modified to handle these enterprise scenarios, but the idea is to essentially, you know, make that compatible with the public chain. And this is open source, by the way, too. So everything we have, we'll put the links in the link dump, but everything's there, all the code. You can go run this. You can go see how it works. Pretty cool technology. And again, it's a partnership with Intel. There's others in this space who are doing this, Sawtooth Lake, Burrow, a bunch of others who are building on the same technology. So this is pretty cool for us, I think, as Microsoft to be kind of pioneering something new here.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm just curious from a developer perspective and people that are attending this conference, do most of them know that Microsoft is active in this space? Because I do sense that from some people who aren't as familiar with Microsoft and some of the innovation that's taking place in the blockchain space, that maybe they'd be more surprised that we are being so innovative and we are contributing to so many of the open source initiatives in this area. So is that something you see, or would you say most people there recognize what we're doing in this space already when they join?
Yeah, I'd say it's a mix. So people at the conference that are coming in are basically, some of them are purely from like cryptocurrency or different places like that. And they would say, you know, what's Microsoft doing in this space? The people who are more kind of veterans and know where our space was in the enterprise basically already kind of knew what we were doing. But, you know, we've had a lot of new announcements and things that we're working on. So I think that was kind of welcome to, you know, make sure people are up to date with everything that we're doing. This is something new that most people didn't know about. And then we talked through a bunch of other stuff. We released an updated Quorum template, which is JP Morgan's enterprise version of the blockchain, and it has all the new features in it. So we announced that one at that. We also announced two other things that we're working on that are not quite released yet, but very close. Is IPFS, which is a interplanetary file system. So it's a decentralized storage system, if you can imagine. Essentially, instead of being location-based URLs, so in today's world, when you want to store content on the web, let's say, for instance, or an intranet, you essentially have a set of servers or a server that content's going to live on, ultimately. Typically, if it's a high-scale system, there's multiple servers serving that content up, whether it be dynamic code or, you know, static stuff, whatnot. But IPFS takes a different approach to it. So essentially, it's a peer-to-peer network that basically allows you to just throw content at it. And when you throw content at it, you get a content hash back. So Kendall, let's say you're running a node in the United States, and let's say I'm in the UK. We both could be running nodes on this peer-to-peer network. When you inject some content into it, a PDF, let's say, for instance, you get back a content hash. Now, if that content hash is shared through some mechanism, typically through a smart contract or blockchain, you could say, okay, oh, here's where this contract is. It's basically an index. And when I go to hit it in the UK, my machine won't have it right now, but it will know how to get it. Because on this peer-to-peer network, it'll say, hey, I got this content hash, guys. I don't have it. Does anybody else have it? And Kendall's box will say, I have it. Hang on. And it returns it to me. Now, to me in the UK, I don't see that. I just see the content come back.
Wow.
So you can think of it like a content, like a CDN type system, but it's very decentralized. So all the stuff that's being stored there is immutable. So you know that it hasn't been tampered with, very much like a blockchain. And where this applies to the enterprise, so this product's been out there for a while in public space and continuing to evolve. It's awesome. But the enterprise had come to us and said, hey, we're building consortiums now. And these consortiums, which are basically a group of companies, are using blockchain technology, but then they're like, we also need to store stuff like this, like blobs, like PDFs and things like that. Now, what we have done originally was like, well, we can store it off-chain, you know, in a database or a file system,
right,
and then essentially content hash it, do something similar to what IPFS was doing. So we build a hash on it so that we know that it hasn't changed, so we have that immutability, and then just kind of do all this stuff manually. But what we announced here was we've been working with them on a private model, and they've been working on this private model for some time, the libP2P guys and the group there. And it's super awesome because we can basically build a private IPFS network now. And so that's what we are looking to release here very soon and basically allow these consortiums to plug into that and use that. So that's awesome.
What would you say are, and I'm just thinking through as I listen to you and hear some of this news that I'm not as familiar with, what do you think are some of the I guess the preconceived notions about what blockchain can and can't do that may or may not be true. Does that make sense? Because I feel like a lot of people see it. I think for most newbies, it's, oh, we're talking about Bitcoin. And so obviously that's not necessarily, that's just a manifestation of this platform versus the actual platform itself. So do you think that there are a lot more use cases than people realize? Is that something that you still see? Or is that more just new people to the space?
Yeah, I think two things with it. There's definitely a lot of use cases that people are like exploring or innovating on or pioneering. You know, the predominant ones to this point have been things like supply chain or financial type settlements, where we need to have that immutability and that really strong asset type transaction, but be able to do it in such a way that we don't have one huge tower of data. So the idea is to not have just one place that hackers can go compromise and take over, leverage the network, you know, to kind of do that. So I think that's one aspect. Yeah. So I think in that respect, it's something good. I think it's also a component. Like, it's not something that solves everything. It's not like an application platform that we just build everything on top of and that's it. Mm-hmm. I think it fits in with other things. So when you think about IoT, you think about AI and all these different technologies that come along, they're not really like an AI solution or an IoT solution or a blockchain solution. They're more like a solution to solve this problem that we have, whether it be like reducing complexity in a supply chain, as I mentioned before. You know, how would we do that in a traditional world? Well, we have synchronized databases and we use EDI and all these things. But in a blockchain space, blockchain can function as the ledger there and provide that logical database. But, you know, obviously there's other components to it. It's not just a blockchain ledger and those components. It's the dApp that's running on top of it. It's, you know, potentially AI, like I mentioned before. A lot of times IoT is plugged into these as well because it's everywhere, you know, no matter what we're doing. So I think it's a combination, and it's like it's one of the components to make these modern applications is what I would really categorize it as.
Do you see some people throwing or eager to use blockchain in certain circumstances because it is new and it is emerging and it is very hot and it may not be the right fit for those scenarios? Do you think that's something that people are having to mitigate, is should I really be using this or is it just super cool?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think last year we saw a lot of that because basically CIOs and CEOs were like, we have to be doing something in blockchain, so go do it. And then people would just do it. Now, I don't even think that's necessarily a super bad thing, because people needed to get experience with it. And the best way to get experience is to start using it and seeing how it would apply to your business. Right. And because it's so innovative, it's and new, we don't even know what all the possibilities are here yet, like to your point. So we're kind of exploring here, and it really just comes down to, you know, for us in the enterprise, what we're thinking about blockchain, when we say, hey, if we have a B2B or multiple B2B scenario that we're connecting here, this is like an ideal case. We typically are not seeing things where we would say, well, one company is just going to implement blockchain and use it inside their org. Mm-hmm. It would make little sense then. It's really when you start connecting to other people or other businesses that the value really shines through, because that's where because if you don't trust yourself inside your four walls, you probably have other problems. Once you get outside your four walls, there is a trust envelope there, right? Of like, I don't know. I mean, I'm working with this other business partner, but I don't 100% trust their IT because, you know, there's risk and all kinds of things in configuration and all kinds of other stuff. So I think that's really where blockchain can provide value. So we look for those kind of key scenarios where there's a B2B, where there's some sort of where the immutability would play in well to be able to prove stuff later. Identities or some transaction happened, these kind of things. Those are like key elements we look for picking this.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, and the last thing I wanted to touch on was Pantheon. So another product we announced and launched was in conjunction with a consensus group called Pegasus. They have a product called Pantheon that we launched on Azure, which is a Java version of the EVM. So I mentioned before the EEVM that Microsoft was working on. This is a Java version, same thing. So it's got an Apache 2 license, and I'll touch on that in a second. And basically it's an implementation that's, we'll call it enterprise friendly, that works with public blockchains. And they're also working on a private implementation too for consortiums. And so the thing they announced here was their public client called Pantheon, and we did a hackathon with them post-DevCon, and the nice thing there is enterprises, a lot of them are using either C# or Java or something like that. Most of the blockchain technology at this point has been more closer to these really more cutting edge kind of frameworks like Go and I wouldn't say Python's cutting edge. It's pretty old as well, but Python to some extent. And so most businesses, enterprises have built, massive amount of business logic in Java and things like that. And so that was one of the key drivers that Pantheon was going after, was let's develop something that's familiar to these people so that they can easily kind of consume it and use it. And if they need to change it, they can make changes. It's open source as well. But so I think that was a really welcome thing. And then the licensing aspect, a lot of the licensing that happens in this space is around, this GPL licenses, which basically means, hey, you can use this stuff as open source, but if you make changes to it, you need to push your code back to us. You need to contribute back, and that's kind of the license you're signing up for there. A lot of enterprises, not good with that, right? Because they want to look at something and say, hey, we want to modify it, but we don't necessarily want to push it back because maybe it's something that they don't want to share with competitors or other reasons. Mm-hmm. And the Apache 2 license makes that much easier because Apache 2 says, you are allowed to do that. There's obviously a trade-off there, right? There's if you do the Apache 2 license, more people can modify it in isolation, but then there could be some FUD around it because people say, which version of this thing are you running? Because I have this special version, kind of thing. Where GPL kind of brings everybody together and says, no, we're all building the same thing. It's all going back to the same piece, so we all know we're using the same piece.
So that kind of allows people to have more granularity and differentiation in the way that they implement. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I think the Java, just making it easier for people who already have that knowledge, the industry knowledge around Java, to just take advantage of that and be able to use it in blockchain space. Those are the two big kind of big drivers there. And we're happy to have these guys on Azure. So we had those running. And like I said, we did a hack already with these guys. And so moving forward, the privacy aspects will come in. They have some things they're working on for consortiums. And we'll be looking to expand that as well.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like y'all covered a lot of really, really cool updates at the conference.
Yeah, and there was a lot of good updates back from the core Ethereum Foundation, Vitalik, and the group talking about scaling and some of the new things that they're working on in relation to that to make these networks faster and these systems work better and more close to what we're used to in traditional form. But bringing along all these nice attributes of the immutability and the decentralized nature to fight the kind of hacking and manipulation.
Do they publicly share any of the sessions? If people want to listen to that after the fact, is it this stuff comes down the pipeline later on for the public, or how does that work?
Yeah, definitely. Everything was kind of filmed. I mean, there's a lot of YouTube videos out there too. There's no restrictions on that. So a lot of the stuff was coming out real time. But I'll post some links in the link dump to some of the most popular ones, the sessions and things, so people can get a sense for what they are. I mean, they vary a lot in the sessions. Some of them are a bit more kind of business or social impacting talks. And then some are like super hardcore geeky, like PhD math level stuff, talking about algorithms and whatnot. So it's interesting to see the mix, and you can kind of pick which ones are important to you.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And I think for most people, I've gone to a couple of just blockchain related events in the Dallas area to learn more about the technology itself and kind of rid myself of some of the preconceived notions that I had about what it was capable of doing. And I definitely think that the context and making it a more tangible concept is something that is really valuable. So I'm sure those sessions may lend to people who are wondering, what exactly does this technology mean? Because at the lower level, it can be a little bit difficult to follow if you're not as familiar. So,
for sure. Yeah, and we'll put the links out here. We also are launching this thing called Block Talk at Microsoft. We talked about it at the conference a bit, which is a you can think about it if people know us like around Azure Fridays. You know, we have these kind of bite-sized things talking about a specific piece of technology. So blockchain is encompassing many, many different pieces of technology, from cryptography to these kind of new type of database or ledger formats and things. And even just like use cases of like when someone starts talking about homomorphic encryption or how does that apply to this, these kind of things. So we're going to do this thing called Block Talk as part of Channel 9. Which will basically be these kind of nuggets of information, technical, and some of them are a little higher level too, to kind of dive into some of these areas, make people aware of them. And again, very bite-sized, 15 to 30 minutes maximum, and you can kind of consume them, get a good feel for what that means, so when it gets brought up in a meeting, you know what people are talking about.
That sounds awesome. I'm going to attempt to make a joke here. I don't know if the joke's going to go, because it's going to explain if I got something you said earlier. So wouldn't it be funny if I had to, if you threw that into one of the hashed locations in the decentralized database and I didn't know where it was, so I had to get my hash to go out there and find it. And
Yeah.
That's what you have to do to be able to watch the video. For the
week. Make a little challenge for people to find them.
It's like you actually have to go locate it somewhere in the unknown location.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Awesome. Well, that's all I got for today. So I really appreciate, you know, the time here to share what we kind of learned there and some of the new things that we're working on. And like I said, I'll put all the links out there for you guys. And Kendall, appreciate all the feedback and questions here.
Yeah, thanks for sharing all of it. It was great.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.